Chapter 9. A gentleman coming in, Miss Bella, with a short and sharp exclamation, scrambled off the hearth rug, and massed the bitten curls together in their right place on her neck. The servant girl had her key in the door as I came up, and directed me to this room, telling me I was expected. I am afraid I should have asked her to announce me. Pardon me, returned Mrs. Wilfer. Not at all. Two of my daughters. R.W., this is the gentleman who has taken your first floor. He was so good as to make an appointment for tonight when you would be at home. A dark gentleman. 30 at the utmost. An expressive, one might say handsome, face. A very bad manner. In the last degree constrained, reserved, diffident, troubled. His eyes were on Miss Bella for an instant, and then looked at the ground as he addressed the master of the house. Seeing that I am quite satisfied, Mr. Wilfer, with the rooms, and with their situation, and with their price, I suppose a memorandum between us of two or three lines, and a payment down, will bind the bargain. I wish to send in furniture without delay. Two or three times during this short address, the cherub addressed had made chubby motions towards a chair. The gentleman now took it, laying a hesitating hand on a corner of the table, and with another hesitating hand lifting the crown of his hat to his lips, and drawing it before his mouth. The gentleman, R.W., said Mrs. Wilfer, proposes to take your apartments by the quarter. A quarter's notice on either side. Shall I mention, sir, insinuated the landlord, expecting it to be received as a matter of course, the form of a reference? Returned the gentleman, after a pause, that a reference is not necessary. Neither, to say the truth, is it convenient, for I am a stranger in London. I require no reference from you, and perhaps, therefore, you will require none from me. That will be fair on both sides. Indeed, I show the greater confidence of the two, for I will pay in advance whatever you please, and I am going to trust my furniture here. Whereas, if you were in embarrassed circumstances, this is merely supposititious conscience causing R. Wilfer to color. Mrs. Wilfer, from a corner she always got in two stately corners, came to the rescue with a deep tone perfectly. Why then I might lose it. Observed R. Wilfer, cheerfully, money and goods are certainly the best of references. Do you think they are the best, Pa? Asked Miss Bella, in a low voice, and without looking over her shoulder as she warmed her foot on the fender. Among the best, my dear. I should have thought, myself, it was so easy to add the usual kind of one, said Bella, with a toss of her curls. The gentleman listened to her, with a face of marked attention, though he neither looked up, nor changed his attitude. He sat, still and silent, until his future landlord accepted his proposals, and brought writing materials to complete the business. While the landlord wrote. When the agreement was ready in duplicate, the landlord having worked at it like some cherubic scribe, in what is conventionally called a doubtful, which means a not at all doubtful, old master, it was signed by the contracting parties, Bella looking on as scornful witness. The contracting parties were R. Wilfer and John Rokesmith Esquire. When it came to Bella's turn to sign her name, Mr. Rokesmith, who was standing, as he had sat, with a hesitating hand upon the table, looked at her stealthily, but narrowly. He looked at the pretty figure bending down over the paper and saying, "Where am I to go, Pa? Here, in this corner?" He looked at the beautiful brown hair, shading the coquettish face. He looked at the free dash of the signature, which was a bold one for a woman's, and then they looked at one another. Much obliged to you, Miss Wilfer. I have given you so much trouble. Signing my name? Yes, certainly. But I am your landlord's daughter, sir. Apostrophe, as there was nothing more to do, but pay 8 sovereigns in earnest of the bargain, pocket the agreement, appoint a time for the arrival of his furniture and himself, and go. Mr. Oaksmith did that as awkwardly as it might be done, and was escorted by his landlord to the outer air. When R. Wilfer returned, candlestick in hand, to the bosom of his family, he found the bosom agitated. Pa, apostrophe said Bella, we have got a murderer for a tenant. Apostrophe, pa, apostrophe said Lavinia, we have got a robber. Apostrophe, to see him unable for his life, to look anybody in the face. Apostrophe said Bella. There never was such an exhibition. Apostrophe, my dears, apostrophe said their father, he is a diffident gentleman, and I should say particularly so in the society of girls of your age. Apostrophe, nonsense, our age. Apostrophe cried Bella, impatiently. What's that got to do with him? Apostrophe, besides, we are not of the same age. Which age? Apostrophe demanded Lavinia. Never you mind, Lavi, apostrophe retorted Bella, you wait till you are of an age to ask such questions. Pa, mark my words. Between Mr. Oaksmith and me, there is a natural antipathy and a deep distrust, and something will come of it. Apostrophe, my dear, and girls, apostrophe said the cherub patriarch, between Mr. Oaksmith and me, there is a matter of 8 sovereigns, and something for supper shall come of it, if you'll agree upon the article. Apostrophe, this was a neat and happy turn to give the subject, treats being rare in the Wilfer household, where a monotonous appearance of Dutch cheese at 10 o'clock in the evening had been rather frequently commented on by the dimpled shoulders of Miss Bella. Indeed, the modest Dutchman himself seemed conscious of his want of variety, and generally came before the family in a state of apologetic perspiration. After some discussion on the relative merits of veal cutlet, sweetbread, and lobster, a decision was pronounced in favor of veal cutlet. Mrs. Wilfer then solemnly divested herself of her handkerchief and gloves, as a preliminary sacrifice to preparing the frying pan, and R.W. himself went out to purchase the viand. He soon returned, bearing the same in a fresh cabbage leaf, where it coyly embraced a rasher of ham. Melodious sounds were not long in rising from the frying pan on the fire, or in seeming, as the firelight danced in the mellow halls of a couple of full bottles on the table, to play appropriate dance music. The cloth was laid by Lavi. Bella, as the acknowledged ornament of the family, employed both her hands in giving her hair an additional wave, while sitting in the easiest chair, and occasionally threw in a direction touching the supper. As, very brown, ma, apostrophe, or, to her sister, put the salt cellar straight, miss, and don't be a dowdy little puss. Apostrophe, meantime her father, chinking Mr. Oaksmith's gold as he sat expectant between his knife and fork, remarked that 6 of those sovereigns, came just in time for their landlord, and stood them in a little pile on the white tablecloth to look at. I hate our landlord. Apostrophe said Bella. But, observing a fall in her father's face, she went and sat down by him at the table, and began touching up his hair with the handle of a fork. It was one of the girl's spoiled ways, to be always arranging the family's hair perhaps, because her own was so pretty, and occupied so much of her attention. You deserve to have a house of your own, don't you, poor pa? Apostrophe, I don't deserve it better than another, my dear. Apostrophe, at any rate I, for one, want it more than another, apostrophe said Bella, holding him by the chin, as she stuck his flaxen hair on end, and I grudge this money going to the monster that swallows up so much, when we all want everything. And if you say as you want to say, I know you want to say so, pa, that's neither reasonable nor honest, Bella, then I answer, maybe not, Very likely, but it's one of the consequences of being poor, and of thoroughly hating and detesting to be poor, and that's my case. Now, you look lovely, Pa. Why don't you always wear your hair like that? And here's the cutlet. If it isn't very brown, Ma, I can't eat it, and must have a bit put back to be done expressly. Apostrophe, however, as it was brown, even to Bella's taste, the young lady graciously partook of it without reconsignment to the frying pan, and also, in due course, of the contents of the two bottles, whereof one held Scotch ale and the other rum. The latter perfume, with the fostering aid of boiling water and lemon peel, diffused itself throughout the room, and became so highly concentrated around the warm fireside, that the wind passing over the house roof must have rushed off charged with a delicious whiff of it, after buzzing like a great bee at that particular chimney pot. Pa, said Bella, sipping the fragrant mixture, and warming her favorite ankle. When old Mr. Harmon made such a fool of me, not to mention himself, as he is dead, what do you suppose he did it for? Impossible to say, my dear. As I have told you time out of number since his will was brought to light, I doubt if I ever exchanged 100 words with the old gentleman. If it was his whim to surprise us, his whim succeeded. For he certainly did it. And I was stamping my foot and screaming, when he first took notice of me, was I? Said Bella, contemplating the ankle before mentioned. You were stamping your little foot, my dear, and screaming with your little voice, and laying into me with your little bonnet, which you had snatched off for the purpose, returned her father, as if the remembrance gave a relish to the rum. You were doing this one Sunday morning when I took you out, because I didn't go the exact way you wanted, when the old gentleman, sitting on a seat near, said, that's a nice girl, that's a very nice girl, a promising girl. And so you were, my dear. And then he asked my name, did he, Pa? Then he asked your name, my dear, and mine. And on other Sunday mornings, when we walked his way, we saw him again, and really that's all. As that was all the rum and water to, or, in other words, as R.W. delicately signified, that his glass was empty, by throwing back his head and standing the glass upside down on his nose and upper lip, it might have been charitable in Mrs. Wilfer to suggest replenishment. But that heroine briefly suggesting bedtime instead, the bottles were put away, and the family retired, she cherubically escorted, like some severe saint in a painting, or merely human matron allegorically treated. And by this time tomorrow, said Lavinia when the two girls were alone in their room, we shall have Mr. Oaksmith here, and shall be expecting to have our throats cut. You needn't stand between me and the candle for all that, retorted Bella. This is another of the consequences of being poor. The idea of a girl with a really fine head of hair having to do it by one flat candle and a few inches of looking glass. You caught George Sampson with it, Bella, bad as your means of dressing it are. You low little thing. Caught George Sampson with it. Don't talk about catching people, miss, till your own time for catching as you call it comes. Perhaps it has come, muttered Lavi, with a toss of her head. What did you say? Asked Bella, very sharply. What did you say, miss? Lavi declining equally, to repeat or to explain. Bella gradually lapsed over her hairdressing into a soliloquy on the miseries of being poor, as exemplified in having nothing to put on, nothing to go out in, nothing to dress by, only a nasty box, to dress at instead of a commodious dressing table, and being obliged to take in suspicious lodgers. On the last grievance as her climax, she laid great stress, and might have laid greater, had she known that, if Mr. Julius Hanford had a twin brother upon earth, Mr. John Rokesmith was the man. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.